sausage surprise.
Everybody's good at making something, and I'm good at making crumble.
Crumble. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm good, thank you. How are you, birthday boy?
I'm very well, thank you. I am the birthday boy still. I don't know, like, do you think of... My birthday fell on the Sunday. We're recording on a Monday, and I very much thought of the week prior as my birthday week. Now the birthday's finished.
You know, I take it back. Birthday week's over. Sorry.
I think it is done, isn't it? I don't think I can carry it forward another week. I think you can pick one or the other.
You either choose the week prior or the week after, and you chose the week prior, and that's what you chose.
I chose prior. That said, there was a lot of pink Prosecco in the fridge, and I think Prosecco does go a bit off, so I thought best to drink it now. Mm-hmm. So I have drunk that pre-pod.
It was only the right thing to do.
It was the right thing to do. I mixed that with a bit of Tropicana and it was lovely.
Yeah. You had a nice birthday. As we told everyone last week, I was there for your birthday, but it sounds like you had a nice time.
A lovely time. I had a really good time. I had lots of my nearest and dearest, and we had a silly old time doing karaoke and having fun. And I think the day before and after were very chill. My Sunday thing, I just had an itch for, and I gave myself sort of birthday permission to do, was watch a lot of Lord of the Rings.
Nice.
I've always really meant to watch them through.
Oh, have you never watched them before?
I have seen them before, but I've meant to kind of watch them
in succession.
In a close sitting. Right. Yeah. And I did get through all of one and two, mostly paying attention to what was going on. I have seen them before. And I love them. They're great. They're really nice comfort films. One was a lot better than two.
I need to watch them again. I watched them as a kid. My family were really into them and I really liked them. And then when I started seeing Nick, he'd never seen them before. And I was like, oh, you have to watch Lord of the Rings. They're amazing. And we watched the first one, but I made the mistake of putting on the extended one for him.
Oh,
we got about an hour
in.
And he was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is cinema. Like, I can't believe I've never seen these. Like, what a feat of engineering. This is such a great movie.
Yeah.
And then like, we got 2 hours in. He was like, how is it not over yet? Yeah. How is this one of three? How have we got another hour left?
Well, even in the normal ones, you're like, this keeps going. Like, it just keeps going. But it wasn't boring to me because it was like Sunday activities.
It's a very Sunday film.
Kind of lazy day. I wasn't really hungover, but I was just kind of like, let's take it very easy today. And that was really nice.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was my weekend. How have you been, darling?
Yeah, no, I've been good. I obviously had a lovely birthday celebration with you. There's a photo of me and Alistair that's so funny. We love a little bit of a sing-song, and we did Shallow, which we've done before at karaoke.
It's our go-to.
It's our go-to, and you're always Bradley Cooper, and I'm always Lady Gaga, and I wouldn't have it any other way. But Bradley Cooper has a whole verse before I sort of start singing. And so I just like sat down, cross-legged on the floor, and just like watched you do your verse. And like, there's such a funny photo of us when you're like properly like in karaoke mode, and I'm just fully like gazing into the distance, cross-legged with the microphone in my hand. Oh, it's so funny. But that's basically us doing the podcast.
You were so patient. Well, we're going to do the reverse today, because for today's episode, you're very much leading. And I feel like I am very much following and just kind of nodding.
Well, no, you've done a lot of your research. So for today's Hoodler episode, I'm so excited today. I was on the phone to Alistair earlier today, and I was telling
him. You're hyped up.
I'm hyped up. I'm so excited for this, because basically, so today we're talking about Doctor Who Lost in the Dark Dimension, which is the movie that never happened, which you'll find out a lot more about this episode. And I've like seen whispers of this online. I've heard bits and bobs and seen one photo of a weird looking Cyberman. And the reason that I kind of wanted to talk about it, well, the reason I started looking into it more, and then I was like, oh my God, the more I looked into it, I was like, I have to do a Hoodler episode on this with Alistair. I saw there's a Etsy store called Doctor Who UK. They also have an Instagram, and they do 3D sculpts and 3D prints of Doctor Who figures that character options don't make, which is a very me thing to love.
I was going to say, this is the most you origin for any story.
I know. But they did a sculpt of this Cyberman. I was like, where is this Cyberman from? It looks really like exoskeleton-y, really like almost body horror. I've never seen it before. And I looked into it, and it was from Doctor in the Dark Dimension. I was like, I've never heard of Doctor in the Dark Dimension. And if you, dear listener, have never heard of this, there's a reason for that. And it's because it doesn't exist.
Jump in with that as well. I hadn't heard of it until he texted me, which I think is shocking as well, because it's so linked to other really well-known pieces of like wilderness years, 90s Doctor Who lore, that I'm really surprised we missed this, or I'd miss this anyway, completely. I knew about Dimensions in Time, the Children in Need special. Was that 1993?
That was also 1993, yeah.
Right. And then obviously the 96 TV movie we've talked about now, but it completely passed me by.
Well, I'll go into it a little bit later. I've made a timeline because I always think about the wilderness years. I'm like, oh, Doctor Who, you know, went off air. No one really thought about it. They did a movie and no one thought anything of it. And then in 2005, it came back. But I've got a little timeline I'll talk about later about all the stuff that happened in the wilderness years because it was really chock-a-block. Like, a lot was going on. And a big thing that almost happened was Doctor Who in the Dark Dimension. I think it's so interesting.
Yeah, it's weird. There's like constantly some activity happening in the background with all kinds of conflicting voices. You always have people who are very pro Who, anti Who, wanna buy Who, wanna make Who, wanna make sure Who stays buried completely.
Exactly. This is very much, I think, a project that had a lot of different types of those people within it. It kind of came from the idea of almost like a gift that would make money to the fans who love Doctor Who and home media. And then it kind of spiraled. Then some people were like, this is going to be the best thing ever. Some people were like, this is going to be awful. Some people were like, we want Doctor Who for ourselves, so we want to take this. And I think that we're going to kind of break this episode into two parts. I think I'm going to lead talking about the plot of the actual episode and what would have happened. And then Alice is going to lead a bit of the behind the scenes as to why this didn't end up happening.
Oh God, don't make me sing.
Oh, don't make me sing.
My knowledge though is a little secondhand, but I will try and be as factual as I can.
Listen, I've done my research into both halves, so I'll carry the weight.
Oh,
with
good,
you
can
need.
Correct me. If there's one thing a Doctor Who fan knows how to do, it's correct someone else.
Period. So, for anyone who doesn't know, Doctor Who The Dark Dimension, or Doctor Who Lost in the Dark Dimension, it would have been a feature-length television drama to celebrate the 30th anniversary of Doctor Who in 1993. The production, however, was cancelled a month after it was announced, and very few details had been made public at the time. However, through lots of our online digging and our sources, different articles, different videos, and a very, very interesting magazine, we have put together the story of Doctor Who Lost in the Dark Dimension.
Yes, we've been on YouTube. We've opened a few PDFs. We've gone on Reddit. No, we've done our digging. Actually, I'm looking at the notes we've got now. I was scared to go into the notes. Sam's got 14 pages of notes he did in preparation for this. I went for a walk and listened to a Josh Snares video. That was my prep.
Well, one thing we did do before diving into this episode is we reached out to you on Twitter or X and we asked, what do you know of Doctor Who in the Dark Dimension? And this is what some of you had to say.
James at Volk Smash said, this being cancelled for various reasons and leading to the BBC going, shit, what are we going to do now? And then deciding to make Dimensions in Time is wild. Although, Dimensions in Time did give us a special thing to rag on, similar to Doctor in Distress. So, positive from a negative?
Listen, I'm a Dimensions in Time stan. I'm happy it happened. It's interesting that this didn't, but I'm happy it happened. Ethan, friend of the pod, as always, said, I know very little about this, so I feel as though this episode might actually be educational. And Ethan, I hope it is.
It's very unusual that Ethan, friend of the pod, doesn't have something to say.
I'm glad to have, like, found something he doesn't know.
Didymus Holmes says, my main takeaways that stay in my head are that A, Rick Mile might have been the villain, which would have been awesome, and B, the film would have sidelined Pertwee, Davison, Colin Baker and McCoy, which would have absolutely sucked, especially as McCoy was the incumbent Doctor at the time.
Multiple Fruit said, I remember reading about this in Doctor Who magazine, the first I'd heard of it. The very next day, there was an article in the newspaper saying it'd been cancelled. That was my rollercoaster ride with the Dark Dimension.
Oh. Richard Bignall at Nothing Lane says, having bought most of the surviving production paperwork for the project, interviewed a number of the production personnel, and written an extensive 30-page article on it for issue 3 of Nothing at the End of the Lane, I know quite a bit. Well, Richard, we're about to let you down severely.
Did
you not message Richard? I feel like you got Richard's docs off him.
I went on to Nothing at the End of the Lane and I purchased, which you should all do, I purchased Whoa. Issue 3 of Nothing in the Lane, and I messaged him to say, I bought the article, I can't wait to read it. And I'm really glad I did, because I had done the research I was able to do online for this episode before today, like day of recording. And he tweeted this, and he sent the article, obviously, once I'd paid. And it was so eye-opening and so much information. He really has trawled through the archives and managed to get so many bits of information, talked to so many people about the production of it. Please, I implore you, go buy the article. It is really, really, really worth a read. But we have taken nuggets of this, and it's been really, really useful to find out what the plot of the story was and like condense it a bit. So that's really helped me sort of get my head around it.
I actually have, I mean, as much as I'm kidding as well, about, oh, we don't really know what we're talking about, I actually do have a lot of time for Doctor Who archivists. I actually do think, like, when people have written down in full, very detailed stories, behind the scenes mishaps, the whereabouts of various props and Daleks and fuck ups, I do always really enjoy that. And I'm really glad that this stuff does end up on these blogs and in great detail as well.
Literally. Well, it was very, very useful for this. I want to quickly say before we dive in, we've gotten our information from a lot of different sources. And I want to make sure, you know, first of all, I'll say we're amateur Doctor Who archivists. We do our best to find the information. If we get a couple things wrong, apologies in advance. But we have done our best to find all the information we can as accurately as we can. We have taken snippets that people have said from various Doctor Who conventions, such as Adrian Ridgeford, who wrote the script, and the project's technician, Mike Tucker. We've also gone to various websites, doctor2org.nz, blog.lavazi.co.uk, and then also, as I mentioned, the End of the Lane issue 3. A lot of these places have been where we've got the information from, so thank you to all of them for putting this information out there for people to find.
Yes, thank you very much. Oh, we'd be a bit stuffed without you.
We really would. So normally on Hoolala, we always say, as always, go on iPlayer, watch the episode. It's a great watch. Can't do that this week.
Not today.
It doesn't exist. There are various fan productions, which I'm going to talk about towards the end of the episode, which you can go and look if you want a little bit of homework. But I have put together a summary of the plot for what would have happened in this episode. Alistair, you don't know this plot, do you?
No, like not at all. Not at all.
This is going to be Alistair finding out the plot live with me. And I'm so excited because I think that I can tell why this story didn't happen in the form it was. It's definitely a story that needs workshopping, but the roots of what the story is makes for such a great Doctor Who movie. And I think there's a real difference between doing a Doctor Who special, which is just like a long episode, and a Doctor Who movie. And to me, just reading this, this would have been Doctor Who the movie. You know what I mean?
The alternative pitch.
The alternative pitch. I'm so excited to talk to you about it.
And it's quite adult, isn't it, this story? They're pitching it for a bit of an older audience, I think. That's for 100%. It's for the fans. It's for the hardcore fans.
100%. This definitely isn't a story intended for the kiddiewinks. This is kind of like a love letter, I think, to all the people who stuck with Doctor Who throughout its run and into the wilderness years.
Yes, yeah.
So I'm going to dive in. Not going to make you wait any longer. Here is the story for Doctor Who Lost in the Dark Dimension. So the story is set in a battlefield in the future. It opens in 2525, when the Earth is desolate, ravaged by global catastrophe. There are eco-troops that are led by Summerfield, who are fighting to save the planet. And on the battlefield, they find a body clutching a question mark umbrella tight in the hand. And we realise it's the Seventh Doctor, and he is dead. It literally opens on the dead Seventh Doctor.
They keep killing the Seventh Doctor off. That's always the pitch. There's never been a pitch for bringing back Who that doesn't involve Sylvester McCoy is dead on screen. He gets shot in gang fights. He gets killed on the operating table. He's dead on the battlefield.
Truly can't catch a break, that man. So his body and the TARDIS are sent out on a raft to sea where they're burned in a ceremonial funeral, and Summerfield vows to open the time vortex to save the planet from a mysterious and dark creature that has jumped into the time vortex and made its way to 1936.
My initial reaction is, I hate eco troops as a thing. Like, what? Eco troops? I feel like they thought that sounded so cool. Literally anything else. Eco troops, I'm not into that. It doesn't even give, like, Extinction Rebellion. I mean, that's a cool name. Eco Troops gives Ecova the washing detergent brand.
I would never have thought to put two and two together.
It gives Mums Who Recycle.
No, I get that. I get that. Like I said, this is, you know, working script, but story's there. So we cut back to Earth in 1999, which is, what, 10 years after Doctor Who came off air. But we soon realise that this isn't the world that we're meant to be in. In this timeline, history's been altered, and the Fourth Doctor never died when he fell from the Pharos Tower at the end of Logopolis. He never died. He lived out the remainder of his life on Earth, but he doesn't have his TARDIS. He's lost the TARDIS. We meet politician Oliver Hawkespur, who announces that he'll be standing for the upcoming general election, representing the Evolutionary Party, saying he'll change the face of the planet.
Okay, I can see the link now. The Evolutionary Party and the Eco Troops. It's coming together for me.
You're finding a link. So we see Dorothy McShane, who in our world was a companion of the Seventh Doctor, Ace, working at school, seeing Alex Stewart, who's the son of Brigadier Alistair Gordon Lethbridge Stewart. She's having strange dreams of memories that aren't hers, memories of monsters and Time Lords, and a black bomber jacket with Ace stamped on it. Now, does this ring any bells? Maybe something Donna Noble-esque?
It's something Donna Noble-esque. It's also something John Smith style.
Ooh!
Human Doctor. Human Nature.
Oh, I like that. Which was originally a Seventh Doctor novel.
It was. And I think written after this, and also I think features Bernice Summerfield as the companion.
I'll throw in a little fun fact already. Bernice Summerfield was originally hoped to be at the funeral of the Seventh Doctor at the beginning, but the company that owned the rights to that character were like, we're not doing that. But she was going to be there at one point.
Oh.
So Ace brings her students, because she's a teacher, to Hawkspur's headquarters in order to teach them about current affairs. But what she doesn't know is the now older Fourth Doctor happens to be making a visit there too. Suddenly, there's a crack of energy and Cybermen appear. Dorothy doesn't know who they are. Also in this story, she's always called Dorothy. She's not Ace. Like in this version, she never became Ace. She's because her real name is Dorothy. But she
Oh, I bet you love that.
Only... somewhere over. That's not my karaoke
somewhere.
Song. So the Cybermen appear and Dorothy and Alex escape them. But not long after that, suddenly Daleks appear, along with a special weapons Dalek. And I, at this point, when I was reading this, I was like, this is a lot of things to randomly appear one after the other. What's going on? But just you listen, it makes sense. So the time vortex suddenly cracks open in 1999 and Summerfield and the Eco Warriors appear looking for the Doctor. Hawkspur's guards and the Eco Troops battle and Dorothy and Alex escape. The Daleks then appear in Hawkspur's office and it becomes clear that they're working for him.
Well, it's very convenient, isn't it? Oh, the Cybermen are here. Oh, the Daleks are here.
Listen, maybe you find out why that is. Maybe it's not random. Okay. I will say, at this point in reading the story, I was a bit like, okay, they're trying to throw as many Doctor Who things in as they can, and this is very random. A bit like it is in The Five Doctors, but it does become clear why this is happening.
Okay.
So Alex and Dorothy hold out in a railway station, and then suddenly, you're going to love this, Yetis appear.
Of course. Of course.
They really can't catch a break, these two. They capture Alex, but Dorothy is saved by the Doctor. The unknowing reunion triggers something in Dorothy's brain. She collapses. We learn that Hawkspur has been displaced in time. He's not from 1999. Neither are we. And he's adamant on making sure the Doctor never succeeds in stopping his plans. He knows that Alex and Ace could cause problems for him, and he knows their attachment to the Doctor, even if they don't. Dun dun dun.
How?
So the Doctor brings Dorothy to the Brigadier, but leaves before she wakes up, and we get a flashback to the Doctor's fall from the Ferris Tower, where he was meant to die, as if something held him back, preventing him from regenerating. After being in a unit hospital for a few days, he vanishes. The Brigadier realizes that it must have been the Doctor that brought Ace to him, and he has to go find him. And there's this camp scene in my head. He jumps into Bessie, the yellow car, and he has this tracker that can track beings with two hearts, and he uses it to track down the Doctor.
Okay, I like that.
They meet in this mysterious crypt of a church where the Doctor tells the Brigadier that he was meant to die that day. Although he didn't lose his life, he did lose the TARDIS. His future generations are fading from existence, and if he doesn't find a way to correct time, he will fade away too. This isn't how things are meant to be. They're in the dark dimension. So Hawkspur becomes Prime Minister, and the Doctor eventually meets Summerfield and recognises that she must be from the future. He gets hold of her time transmitter, which means that he now has access to the time vortex. Using her transmitter, the Doctor realises that something's gone wrong in 1936 and he has to go back there using the portal. So he opens the portal, but then leaves the transmitter with the Brigadier as he walks through and goes back to 1936.
Right.
As he investigates, the Doctor and Dorothy are surrounded by Daleks and the only thing they can do to escape is to use the time vortex to jump in and escape.
Right. To the same place?
No.
Oh, God.
And it takes her to the Doctor.
Okay.
But maybe not the one you were expecting.
Oh, all right.
So in 1936, we now get, and I love when they do this, we now get two plots happening at once. There's the Doctor in 1936 and Dorothy and the Brigadier traveling through time.
Yes.
So in 1936, the Doctor finds a younger Hawkspur and it's clear that he's from this time. Like this is where he's from. He's from the 1930s. And that we see that he's trying to build a time bridge, which will mean that he will be able to time travel. Jumping forward to the Dorothy and the Brigadier, they end up on a battlefield in 2136 and quickly realise they're in the middle of a cyber war. Cornered by Cyberman, they're saved when a mysterious figure comes with a stun gun and stuns the Cyberman. They turn around and it's the Fifth Doctor.
Okay.
And they learn, because the Brigadier was talking to the Doctor and he was saying, my future regenerations, I was meant to have regenerated, they are fading away. And they quite quickly realise that using the transmitter, they can travel to the correct timelines. They're not just travelling in time, they're travelling in timelines. And they're saying, if we can get the help of future Doctors, maybe we can stop what's happened in the past.
Right. Okay.
So they are catching up with the Fifth Doctor and they show him this cyber controller that he's captured. That's the Cybermen are trying to get the cyber controller. He is this awesome design. And I implore, please, one of the few things that does exist online from this story is the concept art for the Cybermen. They were designed, and we'll talk into this a little bit later, by the people who designed the monster Alien from the Alien movies.
Oh, yeah,
and they were
going
to have like claws coming out of their knuckles. They had like an exoskeleton. They had like a skull face. They're really, really, really creepy. And the Doctor is talking to them and saying, you know, when you convert, I don't think they've even really pushed this in cyber stories before. The Doctor says to him, well, when you converted the entire world, when everyone is a Cyberman, what are you going to do? And they say, we're going to start culling our own, destroying Cybermen that are no longer useful to us, and we'll start killing our own. And they fully say that that's their plan. So they talk to the Fifth Doctor, trying to see if there's anything he can do. And he says, look, there's nothing I can do. Whatever has happened, happens in my past, which means the solution's in my past. It has to do with the Fourth Doctor, because nothing I can do after the fact will change something that's happened before I existed.
Yes.
And before they can get any more information from him, three Daleks sent by Hawksbur appear. Hawksbur has realised they've gone into the time vortex to speak to the future Doctors. So he sends the Daleks to go and collect all future regenerations of the Doctor. So they go and they remove the Fifth Doctor from the correct time zone and bring them into the Dark Dimension.
Okay.
How you feel? I'm going to do a quick check-in. How are you feeling so far?
Why not just kill him? You'll find out.
Find
That's
out.
What you're saying to me with your eyes. Okay, all right. You're saying hold tight.
Hold tight.
Well, I think so far, I'm thinking the idea of traveling between timelines and not just in time through one timeline is complex.
Yeah.
And if I was a script editor, I'd advised against.
Fair. It's interesting because the entire story is set in the Dark Dimension when time's gone wrong, but it is quite interesting how they travel. Like, they kind of glaze over the fact that they can just not only travel in time, but travel in timelines.
Yeah, which is quite hard conceptually and not how Doctor Who normally operates in terms of time. It's kind of instant normally.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, we're going in for a bit more of a ride. Hold on to your tires.
Right, carry on.
The Fourth Doctor tries to work out what to do, and he ends up slipping into an unknown void.
Sorry, I was late. I slipped into an unknown void.
Slipped into an unknown void. He slips into an unknown void where he is faced. He's basically in catastrophe. He's like, what am I going to do? This guy's in the future. He's going to destroy everything. I'm not meant to be here. Like, I know I was meant to die. His whole like life since falling off the thing, he's always known, like, I was meant to die that day. Something's going on. He's like, what can I do?
How does he know? Does he just vibe?
He just knows time. You know, you remember in the Five Doctors when the Fifth Doctor, like,
oh, they can feel, yes,
they can feel it's off. He could feel things happening to the other generations. The Doctors, to be fair, the Doctor's always been able to like kind of feel what's been going on with his previous generations. Mm-hmm. And when faced with this challenge, he hears a voice and suddenly he gets an apparition of the Third Doctor to come and give him some advice.
An apparition.
Doesn't really seem. It's an apparition of the Third Doctor.
A spooky ghost. A vision of his own past.
He says it's all a matter of conscience and explains that his former incarnations continue to live on inside his conscious. The Fourth Doctor says that he's upset that he let his friends be put in danger because of him. And then Three has to remind Four why he left Gallifrey in the first place. And much as the story has bumped, I think this would have been a really interesting scene because I feel like they kind of glaze over in Classic Who that the Doctor's a Time Lord, the Runaway. It's something they focus on a lot more in New Who. And here you have a really interesting conversation between Three and Four where he says, you left Gallifrey in the first place because you've never backed away from evil in the universe. Things can't end this way. And he has to have a real talk about what he's chosen to do with his life since leaving the Time Lords.
It's quite nice that they're having like an honest conversation between Doctors about why the Doctor left Gallifrey, because of all the reasons that have been given since, it's kind of from a Doctor to a companion or someone else about why he left.
Rule one, the Doctor lies.
Yes, and I think to himself there'd be no reason to, so it's almost like that's a very pure reason.
Yeah.
Is to kind of make right the wrongs of the world. rather than other ones we were given was, why did you run away? Oh, because you were scared of the hybrid. Oh, why did you run away? Oh, because I was running to everything before there you it flickers go. And fades. I want to see it all. So all these other Moffat reasons given.
I quite like the simplicity as well of, like, you've never backed down from a fight. You've never let the buddies win.
I like that too. It's almost like a conversation at, like, you know, the Edge in The Power of the Doctor. When you die, a Time Lord sees kind of their past incarnations kind of guarding the Edge of existence. And they meet with their kind of former selves.
It was very that.
Yeah.
So Dorothy and the Brigadier escape the cyber war. And they travel again, but this time they're separated. They end up coming out the vortex into different spots.
Okay.
This is one bit where I'm like, okay, I understand why they didn't do this. And I'll preface that before I say this. Mainly it's because I feel sorry for Colin Baker. That's the main reason why I say it. So the Brigadier ends up in this hall. And he's trying to work out where he is, and he realizes he's arrived in this, like, alien court, and he sees the Sixth Doctor there, and he is standing to the defense of the Ice Warriors. So he's in the middle of a court case.
One more time.
The Sixth Doctor is in court, alien space court, and he's defending the Ice Warriors. The Ice Warriors have been accused of genocide, but it's actually the aliens accusing them who have been the ones to blame, who are the ones that have created the genocide.
It sounds bad on paper. It's not the worst thing I've heard pitched in Who.
It's not the worst thing.
Would it have looked good on screen at that time? Absolutely not. Would it look funny now done on screen? I actually think yes, because we've seen DT in the anniversary specials kind of stick on his judge wig and do a little kind of like, right, court is now in session, Meep versus the what's it, let's have a chat, let's work it out, let's see who's guilty, who's innocent.
Yeah, I can see it.
Exhibit B.
I've got quotes from all of the actors to play the Doctor about what they thought about the project, which I'll go into later, but basically in that, Colin Baker says, like, I spent my whole last series on Trial of a Time Lord was his entire series, and he's like, I'm going to come back after nearly not being in the role for 10 years, and all I'm going to do is be in court. He was like, what's the point? And I was like, yeah, that's very fair.
I think I'm hearing something else about that said. I don't know if he's saying along the lines of like, oh, I complained about that point that it was so similar to my last series. And they said maybe I could just swap with one of the other doctors. And then he said that offended me even more because of the fact that we were just interchangeable doctors who could just be doing any one of the parts.
That is exactly what he said. And he also then was like, okay, I'll swap with Tom. Swap me with Tom. He can do the other one.
Yeah, give me Tom's bit. Cowards.
So the Sixth Doctor spots the Brigadier and court is adjourned. He obviously recognises the Brigadier. The Brigadier kind of like can put two and two together. He's guessing it's the Doctor. He is in an outfit with all the question marks and stuff. He tells him what's going on and he says that he refuses to believe that none of the TARDIS exists. He says there must be a part of the TARDIS. And if you can find the remains of the TARDIS, then you should be able to stop what's coming.
Okay.
But lo and behold, before anything can happen, the Daleks come and they take the Sixth Doctor out of his time stream as well.
Oh, that is unfortunate.
Oh, it most certainly is. So the Brigadier escapes and he goes back to 1999. But if you remember correctly, where's Dorothy?
Oh, God, where is Dorothy?
Where is she?
Where is she?
So she finds herself alone on a desolate rocky terrain, and she sees an apparition of a man in the distance clutching the remains of Umbrella, and we see that it's the Seventh Doctor, who instantly recognizes her as Ace. But all is not well. He has projected himself right before he was about to die into Ace's mind, and he's fading away. He's physically there, but he's basically dying all over again. He kind of collapses. She holds him in his arms. She doesn't know who he is. And he explains to her, you are my companion. We were the best of friends. I know you don't know who I am, but you have to trust me. Time is fracturing. You're not who you're meant to be. And by putting his mind in hers, it's a beacon to his other selves to recognize her as a friend, to know who she is, to help her. And that's why the Fourth Doctor has been so drawn to this whole story.
Okay.
We then see a figure come from behind them, and we realise they too are in this mysterious void because it's the Fourth Doctor.
Okay.
The Fourth Doctor kneels down with his dying Seventh Doctor, and the Seventh Doctor takes the piece of his mind that's in Ace and puts it back into the Fourth Doctor, so he has now got the memories of his past regenerations, or his future regenerations.
That's good. So Tom Baker's fully made the next few Doctors redundant.
At least temporarily.
At least temporarily.
He apologizes to Dorothy, saying this version was never meant to exist. She is and will always be Ace. The time vortex opens and they reappear in 1999. We're getting towards the final battle now. We're getting there.
We're getting close. All right.
I forgot one little detail as well about when the Doctor was in 1935. I'm so sorry. He saw Hawksbur transform into this beast. We learn that this weird, strange alien that's been traveling the timeline is Hawksbur. He's just taking a human form.
Okay.
So they realize that he has been killing off the eco troops, but then replacing them with duplicates to keep up morale, that there is a hope that they can save the planet, when really there never is a hope.
Okay.
In that time, the Seventh Doctor arrived to try and save them, but obviously ended up meeting his demise. But Summerfield, who's now in the 90s, recognizes the Fourth Doctor as the same man. The Doctor realizes that he has to face Hawksbur one final time, and he understands that in whatever world, with victory or defeat, it will be his final battle. Victory, he has to die to let time go back to normal. Defeat, he dies and this carries on.
Okay.
So he knows going into it, he's like, I can't make it out of this.
Right. Okay.
So in solidarity with the Doctor, the Brigadier says, if this is going to be your final battle, I'm going to have it be mine too. I'm coming with you.
Oh, cheerful.
Cheerful. But they make a little discovery. The church that they have been drawn to, the church they've kept going back to, they realise is the TARDIS.
Oh.
So this church had been going into and out of the chameleon arc, the Doctor, the TARDIS, turned it into this church, and where they've been coming in and out of in this crypt, it is part of the TARDIS. And they find another secondary control room. Do you remember the Fourth Doctor had a secondary control room, like the wooden one?
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Did you not? In the TV show, him and Sarah Jane, they would use the secondary control room. And do you remember, like, okay, in a newer example, do you remember when Amy and Rory go through and Amy's like, what's this? Another control room? Like, they have other control rooms throughout the TARDIS.
I love how you slipped into that accent.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yes, I do recall. I do recall.
In this control room, the Doctor dons his original Fourth Doctor costume, the hat, the scarf, the coat from his first story, and the Brigadier puts on his military uniform. Once again, he is Brigadier.
That's nice.
Yeah, they're like, if we're going to kick ass and go into battle, we're doing it properly.
we can dress up for it.
Hawksbur, by this point, in present day, which is 1999, killed all the military leaders, killed world leaders. He invited them to his house, got the Daleks to exterminate them. They're dead. But we realise that in his research centre, he has been creating... I'm going to see how to put this into layman's term, because I only just got my head around it today. And this is where I think the plot does get a bit like, I can understand why they didn't do it, but it is cool.
This is where the plot gets difficult.
He basically has a way of taking energy and turning them into beings from his memory. But now he has the Fifth and the Sixth Doctor trapped here. He has access to their memories. He's cryo-frozen them. And then he starts using those to create Daleks and Cybermen and Ice Warriors and other monsters from the Doctor's past, which, as I said, is why they randomly are the ones attacking people, because he's taking them from the Doctor's memories and creating them.
Okay.
The Doctor and the Brigadier take Bessie to go and find Hawksbur. Dorothy also makes her way to his lab, thinking that she can do anything. Spoiler alert, she can't. Do you remember ages ago? Feels like years ago I started this, doesn't it? I said that Alex, Brigadier's son, was dating her and he got captured. He's been taken over by Hawksbur. He tries to beat Ace up.
Aww.
He's keeping her away, stopping her from doing anything. The Doctor challenges him to a duel, a sword fight.
Okay.
And they end up on the roof of the building where the Doctor uses the electricity from the, I believe, the aerials on the top of the roof to sort of put electricity through him. He falls off the roof and turns back into the monster that he is. The Doctor and him have like a real face-to-face combat. And at the same time, the Brigadier has to create a time vortex big enough to suck Hawksbur in. To do that, he has to repair something in the TARDIS. So he goes back to the TARDIS, and I can see elements of this being used in other stories, like Grace having to go and fix the TARDIS while the Doctor's speaking to the Master. But the Cybermen are guarding the church just to find a way to slip in. And to do this, him and Summerfield go to the TARDIS, and Summerfield sacrifices herself in order to let the Brigadier get through to the TARDIS. So the Brigadier gets into the TARDIS and uses that to create a time vortex big enough for the Doctor to push Hawthorne through. And at the same time as this, Hawthorne is using all of these creatures from the Doctor's past to invade Earth. His plan is, I'm going to get all these monsters to come destroy the Earth for me, basically, and then I will rebuild society once it's gone. And this was when it was going to be a really cool montage where they recreate iconic scenes from Doctor history. So you know the Cybermen walking down the steps of St. Paul's?
Yes.
You know the Daleks going along Tower Bridge?
Yes.
They were going to recreate all of those shots, but with the redesigned monsters that they had for this special.
Oh, that's nice.
Which
yeah, I like
quite
that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Once Hawksbur is sucked into the time vortex, time starts to go back as it was. Suddenly, Ace sits upright and she's in the churchyard. and the TARDIS, the actual TARDIS there, the church isn't there anymore, the TARDIS is there. The fourth Doctor hobbles from outside the TARDIS and collapses, and he's dying, because we're now back in the current timeline. He shouldn't be there, he's dying.
Oh, why do we have to keep killing Doctors? Yeah, okay.
I know. And he says to her, "Did I die a noble death this time?" And she says, "More noble than you could ever imagine." He then regenerates, right in front of her, into his fifth, then sixth, and then seventh body, one after the other. He goes through his regeneration cycle to get to the present Doctor. Ace is now Ace, but she doesn't have any of her memories of what happened. The Doctor is the only one who remembers. They stand at a tombstone, and it reads, "Professor Oliver Hawkesbur, September 11th, 1980 to December 12th, 1936. Meaning that history never happened in that way. The Doctor died his fourth generation. Everything's back to normal. A confused Ace starts asking the Doctor questions, and his answers are very vague. Everyone's back in their original timeline. The Brigadier's doing his missions. The people in the future stay in the future. But the episode ends in quite an interesting way. It's not the way that I thought it would. The Doctor asks Ace, "Do you remember Alex? Do you know who Alex is?" And she says, "No, I don't know who that is." And he sort of says, "Don't worry about it." They go back into the TARDIS, and the TARDIS disappears. And the final shot of the special is panning out of the graveyard, and we see a gravestone that says Alexander Lethbridge Stewart, 1969 to 1975, which means that in this original time stream, he died as like an 11-year-old. He died as a 6-year-old. So in the real Doctor Who timeline, the Brigadier's son died. He never, you know, Kate had a brother. And it was only because of this one timeline that he managed to live out his life. So even in this awful time when everything went wrong, she got to be with Alex for a little bit.
That is kind of nice, but like, oh my God.
Trauma.
For an anniversary special for like a let's get the band back together.
Heavy, like, right?
Oh my God. So heavy. Dead kids, dead villains, dead doctors, dead. It's, you know, ended at a graveyard. Like, the symbolism of a show put on a decade-long hiatus going, you know, ending in a graveyard is so, it's certainly a choice.
It is a choice. It is a choice. It's,
yeah.
I think there are a lot of elements from this I do really like. I'm not going to go into all of them because obviously I've just spent so long talking about what the plot is, but there is a lot of good to be having. I think it does feel like a movie rather than just like another episode, whereas other like anniversary specials feel just like an additional episode in the story. This feels a bit more like a movie. One thing I like about it is that it explores another timeline, but by the end of it, things are back to normal. It's like, no, we put that all right, and now we're back to normal.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of, it's nice that, what is nice? It's nice that everything's back to normal in the end. It's certainly interesting that they keep wanting to kill Sylvester McCoy on screen. I didn't read the whole script and I didn't read the plot summary. I did open up the like maybe first, second, third page of the script, and the directions on there are so miserable. After they've killed off Sylvester and they put him on a boat with the TARDIS, apparently they can't just leave the TARDIS. The TARDIS they also have to cremate. It says, "Surrounded by wood, straw, and cans of petrol round its base, the familiar shape of a faded, battered blue police box sits at the centre of the raft, the TARDIS. Just in front of it, a body can be clearly seen laid out with a colourful military flag over it. A bolt of energy flies through the air and slams into the branches alongside the TARDIS. In seconds, the entire raft is ablaze. It slowly drifts towards the setting sun with flames roaring, engulfing the time machine."
That's miserable.
It's miserable. It's kind of badass, but like, for like a, hey, fans, thanks for being loyal and buying the Doctor Who VHS to celebrate, like, here's what we came up with.
I mean, there's something gaggy about opening the Doctor Who 30th anniversary special with the Doctor being dead. And then I think it was very clear at that point, like, I think it's inarguable, the most famous, certainly, and probably most loved Doctor was the fourth Doctor. So I think the thank you to fans is, okay, we're writing a way that you can have another special with your Doctor, but it is going to end up back with the current Doctor. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what you found about the behind the scenes, sis? Because I've yapped away for ages, and I hope you've enjoyed it, but I'd love to hear a bit about the behind the scenes of this.
Professor of Yapology over here. Yeah, I think for me, the story is one thing, and I wasn't familiar with the story, but the behind the scenes is almost the more interesting part. As someone who is like in anxious fear at all times of being in trouble at work, at like messing up so badly that everyone's like, oh my God, you did what with the reports? What did you put in that slide deck? What did you just email to that guy? Like someone who is just, you know, when you like check an email and then you check it again after you've sent it and you think somehow you'll be like swearing halfway through it. It's nice to see a production this badly messed up in a way.
Like, it's not just me.
It's not just me. Something that stands out to me looking at the facts of this story is that they started over at BBC Enterprises to plan the 30th anniversary celebration of 1993 in September of 1992, which is kind of leaving it tight, guys. We're in Q3. Is it Q3? It might even be Q4. I think we're in Q1, 2, 3, 4. No, we're in Q3. We're leaving it late. When I look at booking the work summer party, we're looking at doing that in December the previous year. When we look at doing the Christmas party, best believe we've done the viewings already. You've got to get ahead of these things. And I fear planning a TV movie like in September for the next year is a choice. I mean, where it was left from everything that we've learned, Sam, about Classic Who, which obviously began and concluded before either of us were born, is that though the show was kind of on this indefinite hiatus in 1989, the hope was that it would always come back in some form. I mean, some people probably were just happy to see the back of it indefinitely. But I think broadly, the hope was it would come back in some form.
Yeah.
That maybe it just needed a co-producer or someone else to make it, or a bit of time off, or the right writer or the right showrunner to make it work this time, to help it find its way again.
Yeah.
I think what it sounds like happened is BBC Enterprises, which then became BBC Worldwide, which then merged and became BBC Studios. BBC Enterprises realized that they had this dedicated base of fans. And I think they actually worked out how many dedicated fans they felt they had at that time. The number in my head is 130,000, and I have no source for that number. And I think they worked out how much money they thought those fans were willing to spend on either a monthly or annual basis, and basically worked out, this is a little cash cow for us. These Doctor Who fans will buy. And the VHS
and we still do.
And we still do. And the home video VHS releases we're doing, they're charting really well. They are lapping this stuff up. So what they would call a thank you gift, a straight to video thank you, others might say was a bit of a cash grab for these fans with a bit of disposable income. So it's the idea was nice. The idea of saying, why don't we, look, we're doing all these videos. Why don't we put out something brand new? That will send the fans bananas. And let's get the gang back together. Also, the other thing I think that triggered this was that Tom Baker had been going around the conventions and had been saying very publicly that he'd like to be the Doctor again, and may have even approached the BBC to say,
I think he did, yeah,
I want to be the Doctor again. And so they kind of wrote that script with him in mind and almost had the other Doctors who are also alive and also happy to come back as a bit of an afterthought, with a bit of like, oh, they'll say yes. They'll be up for it. It's fine. Which we'll come back to. And then alongside all of this as well in the 90s, as you said, it wasn't just this kind of like totally dead and buried thing, Doctor Who. There was people kind of like trying to find a way back for it. So Philip Segal was the British-American producer who went on to produce the TV movie of 1996, and he was negotiating between the BBC and Amblin Entertainment, which is Steven Spielberg's production company, to potentially get the rights for Doctor Who to make a stateside American-produced Doctor Who series, which would be a complete sort of reinvention of the show. And the story that you just heard was written by fan, though I'm sure he's not just a fan, but fan Adrian Wrigglesford. And the director, funny enough, would have been and was attached to this and was contracted and did accept, you know, during these kind of prep stages to work on this, Graham Harper. And he was brought on because he had directed some of the scary episodes of Who before this, the Caves of Adrazani. Oh my God, I'm saying it wrong. People were like, that's not how you say Adrazani. Classic Who fans, I'm really sorry. Revelation of the Daleks as well. And of course, in revived Who, 2005 onward Who. That era, he did Army of Ghosts, 42, Utopia, Unicorn and the Wasp, Turn Left, Journey's End, banger, 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 banger. In fact, actually, he is the only director who has done stories in both the classic and revived series eras.
He is.
Anyway, he was working on this. And essentially, as we say, it's kind of a fourth Doctor story, which I think was apparent to everyone that Tom Baker had a very beefed up role compared to everyone else in this, which is why we got those jokes about, oh, swap with Tom. And it got really far as well. Like, that is the story based on the scripts. And I think the scripts ended up online because someone who was doing rehearsals ended up leaking it. I'm not sure how it like came into the public domain exactly. And they did test filming, they did location shoots. Funny enough, I think they were going to film some of it in Surrey. I guess Doctor Who was quite London-based back then. They did model tests. They did title sequence mock-ups. They decided which theme they were going to use. I think they were going to use the Third Doctor's theme for it.
I think they said it was like a beefed-up Third Doctor's theme. They were going back... I think there's a quote where they were like, we're going back to the original. And by the original, they mean the Third Doctor in, which I found quite funny. But yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And they even had people working on the creature designs. And that's where you get the heart of this whole story is, where do we get to the models that Sam found on Etsy? Where do we get those cool skeletal Cybermen that has led us to this part of the episode? They were being designed by the people at Henson's Creature Workshop, Jim Henson. But the designer from Henson's Creature Workshop was Nigel Johns, trained by H.R. Geiger, who designed Alien. So, I mean, like, we had, like, top people working on this, which was really cool. So, at so many points did this go wrong in the next few months. So, BBC Enterprises were like, this is a great idea. Of course we should do this. But BBC Enterprises had only really made documentaries. Like, they hadn't done dramas. They didn't know how to make dramas. Well, they had no experience in making dramas, let's say that. So that would normally be with, you know, BBC drama.
BBC drama.
As you'd expect. So they buzzed this thing, and I guess everyone looked at it and was like, that's a good price. Yeah, we can do that. And then later on, people looked at it and said, that's not enough money, even nearly. That needs to come up from wherever it was, say, £300,000.
I think it started at through 200 grand, and then initially they were like, try adding another 100 grand, and then it kind of spiraled.
Right. And then when it got to BBC drama, they were like, make that 900. And then I think then the BBC One controller ended up involved, and he was like, actually, don't make it straight to video. I'm actually very pro Who. I'd love to have this on a slot on BBC One. Here's a bit more money. But even then, they'd miscalculated the costs and they hadn't factored in the broadcasting costs, and it was just way more expensive than they thought it was going to be. In addition to that, they hadn't approached all the doctors, so they'd kind of just assumed that, I guess, they were going to like go for it. Peter Davison said, BBC Enterprises never contacted me. He said, they never returned my agent's calls when this project was floating around. I was then sent a script later on saying, we hope you like the script. We look forward to working with you.
Presumptuous.
And there was a documentary made around the same time where all the doctors are together chatting about the project. And they are so vocal about like, yeah, like not really into this. Not really sure this is a story that people are going to want to see. Not really sure this is the kind of thing I want to do.
Have you ever watched more than 30 Years in the TARDIS?
No.
I have it on DVD, and we have to sit down and watch sometime. We should probably do a Hulu episode on it. I had it on video when I was a kid. I remember watching it around the time like series 2 came out. I have childhood memories for more than 30 Years in the TARDIS in the way that I do for like series 3 of Doctor Who. It's such a good documentary. We have to sit down and watch it sometime.
And then the final nail in the coffin, apart from just the insane cost, which I think already kind of ruled it out completely. They'd announced it already. I think they announced it in Doctor Who magazine a month later. They were like, just kidding. We actually can't afford that. So Philip Segal, who was over at Amblin, which was Steven Spielberg's company, felt that the special was basically so bad that it would mess up his plans for launching this American Made series. They were in this very late stage of discussions. They felt they were like ready to present their Bible, their version of Who. They were ready to sort of lock in the contracts, make this thing happen. And then along comes this horrible, cheesy, low budget production where they felt they were kind of wheeling out all the old doctors again, well past their prime, to do something that was a bit below them. They weren't really paying them properly. And they just felt, this is a bit cringe. His words were, I read the script and it was awful. It was really embarrassing and it was silly. And then Graham Harper on the other side said, I think Amblin Films, Spielberg's company, were interested in buying the rights. And I think the BBC had to cease and desist or the deal wouldn't go through. I think that's what happened. So his impression of that was that basically they put pressure on the BBC and said, if you release this thing, we're not doing the deal.
And the BBC were like, oh, no, we need the check.
So they personally basically said to BBC Enterprises, like, by the way, this is dead. We've spoken about it at a BBC board level. It's not happening. And they also felt, I think, that it was disrespectful to the previous doctors. Yeah, they felt that their feelings had actually been hurt by the process, by the script, by the beefed up role for like some but not others.
100%. Yeah. No, all of the doctors had spoken out about it. John Pertwee said, the script was sent to me, but my agent had not even had the chance to negotiate it in any way before it was cancelled. It shouldn't be given to a writer that knows something about what we're doing, someone like Barry Letts. So he, at the root, was saying it just wasn't a good story. As you mentioned, Peter Davison wasn't happy with the way they were doing things, says it wasn't by the book. Colin Baker said, I did have time to read the script, but there was no more discussion after that. The next I heard, it had been cancelled. And exactly as you said, I had one discussion on the phone with Graham Harper in which he tried to put my reservations at ease because I was slightly concerned there seemed to be within the script a certain inequity as to the distribution of the work involved. And then that's where he famously said, give me Tom's part.
Yes.
And then Sylvester McCoy, bless him, says, it was about my doctor, but then it brings in Tom Baker's doctor because I seemingly get killed at the beginning and then things spiral out of control. It goes through different generations and comes up to Tom's and he eventually saves the day. I come back to life and goes happily on to the next story. So it looks as if it might have been a story written to insert into one of my seasons.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't even feel like he really knows why they're doing it.
Yeah. I mean, what it went from as a pitch to what it became, aka Dimensions in Time, aka the EastEnders crossover for Children in Need, which was a 15-minute bit. Almost like, I mean, hearing that epic story that you've just heard, thinking about how ambitious that would be on screen even now, the amount of effects you would need, how would you even go about putting a flaming TARDIS on the river? You know, like all of these visuals that you would need to come up with, and then ultimately what they made, I feel like just kind of illustrates the gap between what they were pitching and like what was doable. It feels like they just totally jumped the gun. And we're like, well, we've got the autonomy and the budget to do a straight-to-video home release. Why don't we make a movie? And then they were like,
yeah, literally.
Oh, it's expensive to make movies. Oh.
That was when they realized they made a mistake. Well, I mean, it's funny when you look at the timeline together, because like I mentioned before, I put together kind of a wilderness timeline of things that happened before and after this. Because I always kind of think, oh, Doctor, you know, went off air, no one thought about it, then it came back. So 6th of December 1989, the final episode of season 26 aired, which was the end of the 7th Doctor's era. September 1992, they planned for the 30th anniversary special. 10th of June 93, it's announced. 9th of July 93, it's cancelled. That November, The Dimensions in Time is released, as well as More Than 30 Years in the TARDIS documentary. So this is how quick the turnaround was. They aired Dimensions in Time November 93. By March 94, the Leaky Bible, which we spoke about in our review of the Doctor Who movie with Paul McGann, had been printed and was being circulated pitching the revival for Who. So it was like a mere, 6 months or something between this being acts and airing Dimensions in Time and the Leaky Bible going around. In 96, we get the TV movie. 99, Curse of the Fatal Death. We also get the first Doctor Who Monthly Adventures, which is the first ever Big Finish release for Doctor Who in 99. 2003, Doctor Who Schalke animated series. And by March 2004, the revival series with Christopher Eccleston is announced. So much happened in those, 15 odd years.
Sam, tell me more about what happened since to this story. Is it lost to the ages? Is a written account all we'll ever have?
Well, no. So thank you so much for asking. Fans have taken it amongst themselves to create expanded media which portrays this story to be watched or listened to. So to be watched or listened to, as well as a couple nods in official Doctor Who media, which I'll tell you about. So Doctor Who Lost in the Dark Dimension was a fan-made animated series posted on YouTube, the YouTube channel Season 26B, from 2014 to 2016, with the first episode getting over 50,000 views. In 2021, a fan-produced Big Finish-style audio drama was made for the concept of the Dark Dimension. It was originally posted on the Pharos Features YouTube channel. However, it was deleted in agreement with the BBC. The BBC got in touch, and they said, this is good. This is a little bit too good. We don't want people thinking that we made this. Please, can you take this down? And they said, sure, Mr. BBC, oh my God, I'll take it down. However, if you do want to listen to it, on archive.org, you can listen to all four parts of the audio drama. I do think the BBC are kind of missing out on a trick not making a Big Finish of this, but that's beside the point.
Interesting.
As mentioned, the Doctor Who UK Etsy shop has sold 3D printed models of the Dark Dimension Cyberman, but in a more official form, in the comic. Have you ever heard of the comic Supremacy of the Cyberman? Came out around the 12th Doctor's era.
No.
There was there was a comic book which I think was bringing together 9, 10, 11, and 12. It was like a multi-Doctor story with the Cyberman. And there's a panel in that where you're looking at Cybermen attacking Doctors throughout history. And in one of them, you get a Dark Dimension Cyberman attacking Tom Baker's Doctor. For you, Alistair, if you go to the bottom of our doc, I've got pictures. I've got a picture of it there.
Oh, my God.
Scroll to the bottom.
Oh, yes.
So I've given Alistair a picture there. You can see a comic illustration from an official BBC really comic. Yeah, it's like a real skeletal Cyberman attacking the Fourth Doctor. And I think that must have been deliberate because obviously this was a Fourth Doctor story. But one thing that I really like, I'm kind of treating this in my headcanon as official. In the magazine, Nothing at the End of the Lane, which is a Doctor Who, I believe, fan-produced magazine. It's available online. Go have a look. There is a comic strip that I believe the magazine commissioned by comic artist Lee Sullivan. Most notably recently, he is the illustrator for the Doctor Who comics in Doctor Who magazine. He did the Fourth Doctor Dalek adventure. I believe he's also doing Shuti Katwa's comics run at the moment. And they commissioned him to do one page of what the comic would look like if the Dark Dimensions got an official style comic. And if you scroll down, I've got the picture there. And he's done an illustration with the Doctor and the Brigadier at the church, realizing something's gone wrong with time, cutting to Hawkspur and the Daleks. And I think this is how I want it. I don't necessarily want a Big Finish style drama. I want a visual comic of this story being like, nothing's canon and everything is. Maybe this is canon, maybe it isn't. Because this is the kind of thing that could be canon and it really doesn't matter because they undo it anyway. But I would love to see this comic with Tom Baker as he looked in the 90s with all the cast coming back, showing what this story would have looked like if they had the budget they wanted, if they could do anything they wanted. This is how I think they should keep this story alive.
I agree. I love that. I think that works really well. I think the comic format just lends itself immediately to, you can be so much more imaginative. You can, create all these really cool visuals that like aren't possible on the screen. And also, can you imagine how ropey the effects would have been on that budget in 1993 with the time they had as well? Like when there's descriptions about kind of like blasts of light and the time vortex ripping open and how that would have looked in 1993 on a straight to VHS production.
Yeah, I think that there's a certain level of quality that we wouldn't have gotten had it happened. But no. I think getting it in comic form, especially when I look at Lee's work here on page, I want to read this. I want to see this comic. Like, I can imagine his designs for these Cybermen. The Ice Warriors as well, they kind of look a little bit like the Koopas in the Mario movie from the 90s, not gonna lie.
Yeah.
But I want to see this world. Like, from the few bits of concept art, what's annoying is that apparently floating around, not online, floating around in physical media in people's personal collections, there is concept art and costumes and the footage for this. I want to see it all. I really want to see what they had envisioned.
That's what I really want to see. If anyone is listening and thinking about how can I leak test footage, send it to us.
Yeah.
We're not saying we're going to send it any further, but we'd love a peek.
We'd love to have a look. Come send it to all of our socials at Hula Pod. Just give us a little DM. We won't share it, we promise.
Yeah. Sam, this has been deeply educational, and I hope that people are able to use today's episode as a bit of a, like, before-bed audiobook.
I hope so. I know it's a very different thing for Hula Lauren, and thank you so much for making it this far into the episode. It's interesting listening to an episode. Thank you for your time. It's interesting talking about something that the majority of our listeners will have no clue about, and I really hope that you've enjoyed hearing about this almost story And please look online, find the concept art. There is some of it out there. Watch a lot of videos, like we said, Josh Nair's videos. That's really good. Lots of articles. If you can get the magazine that we were referencing, loads more information than we could ever fit into this episode of Hoo La La. But I've loved this little deep dive. I found it so interesting seeing, like you said, the difference between what we almost got and what we got. Should we do an episode about dimensions in time?
Oh, to be honest, we probably should. Who's that terrible woman?
Who's that? Not before she cloned me.
That's very our brand.
It's very our brand. I feel like now we will have to. Please tweet us at Hoo La La Pod. Let us know if you want us to do an episode on dimensions in time.
Yes, please, please make that request. And not long to go until we're reviewing the new season of Doctor Who, and we're going to have our hands very full with that one.
Exactly. Very, very full. It was fitting to talk about something that no one has seen, because pretty soon we'll be talking about things that everyone and their dog will
see. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Well, before the new series airs, please let us know, what do you think of this episode of Hoo La La and Doctor Who and the Dark Dimension? You can reach us on all of our social media at Hoo La La Pod. That's X, the app formerly known as Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, all of which at Hoo La La Pod. And you can also listen to old episodes of podcasts on our YouTube channel, which is also at Hoo La La Pod.
And if you did enjoy today's episode, you can leave us a rating. 5 stars always appreciated. You can write a review for us as well and tell us how good it was. You can share it with a friend. You can put it on your story. You can follow the pod so you get notified about new episodes, and you can also donate to our coffee if you would like to financially support the podcast.
Thank you. As we always say, we're trying to save up for a life-size Dalek. We're about £4,492 behind, so every day helps.
One day now.
One day.
One day there'll be someone's sugar baby.
Exactly.
And they'll get a sugar baby's a Dalek. Someone's going to listen, Sam. It's going to happen.
If I ever become a sugar baby, I might not tell everyone, but there will be signs. Well, next week, we are very excited to dive into an episode that people do know a little bit more about. Alistair, do you remember which episode we're doing next week?
No idea.
It's one that you chose.
Is it? Oh, is it the Satan Pit?
It's the Impossible Planet in the Satan Pit! Oh,
I am so excited for this. Okay, if you've made it this far in the episode, if you're still listening, I would love to hear from anyone who was raised in a religious household who watched The Impossible Planet and The Satan Pit and how that was for you. I would love to know what you thought. DM us at Hoo La La Pod, or just DM me at Alice Gibbs if you want to have a chat about that, because I'm very interested to know your experience.
We're going to hear a lot about that from Alice's side next week, I fear.
Buckle in.
Buckle in, baby. Well, thank you so much for listening, as always, and we will see you next week.
See you next week. Have a good week.
Bye.
Bye.